name is Dorothy Alder, and I am here on behalf of the appellant, the Bishop Paiute Tribe. We're here today on a dismissal of the tribe's case by the lower court for failure to have a case in controversy. And most of the opinion or the decision centers on a response that the tribe submitted to the Sheriff's Department on January 6th. That was issued a cease and desist on January 6th. I think it's very important to put sort of the context of the events that were taking place back in January.
Can I interrupt you?
Yes.
Ask you a procedural question.
Yes.
The issue arises as to whether the judge's order was a final order that would be appealable. The dismissal below was involuntary. Under Rule 3 1B, when a dismissal is involuntary for lack of jurisdiction, it's without prejudice. Would you agree with that?
I'm not familiar with the rule, but yes, it is without prejudice.
Okay, so if it was without prejudice, then there are separate rules about appealability from dismissals with prejudice, and some appeals without prejudice are appealable, and some are not. There's a lot of case law about that. But first, the question is, do you have any specific opinion as to why, or argument as to why this appeal, this order, without prejudice would be appealable? And I don't think either party briefed this.
We did not, Your Honor. And I can't really respond to that because I'm not familiar with the rule. Other than a final appeal is a decision that disposes of the case, and this decision does dispose of the case.
Yes, that's my next question. Why couldn't the tribe, instead of taking this appeal, file a motion to amend the complaint, or a motion under Rule 59E? The district court would have had jurisdiction over those because the dismissal was without prejudice.
Correct.
Was that ever thought or considered or thought of, or is there any reason why you didn't do that in consent to this appeal immediately?
Your Honor, it wasn't considered, and I think the primary reason is because of the basis on which the lower court focused. Essentially, what the lower court, what we believe, was saying is that the tribe received a cease and desist order from the county sheriff saying, you will cease enforcing or exercising authority as a state peace officer. The tribe responded saying, okay, let's slow down here. We'll agree to status quo everything until we can meet. Okay? The lower court clearly found that the county said, don't do this. The tribe said, we won't. Case over with. There is no longer a dispute in this case. So I don't believe there was anything left really for us to go in and argue given the fact that we had.
But from your arguments in this court, you very strongly argued that you wanted to continue the dialogue.
Correct.
With the sheriff, and you basically, I don't think you used the word premature, but felt the district court's order was premature, and it seems like you felt it was premature, that you wanted more time to negotiate with the sheriff and to try and reach an accommodation. That's why you went straight at first.
Correct.
It's like that had been done by a motion to file an amended complaint to point out that there are facts the district court maybe wasn't aware of, or a 59E motion.
I believe that all of our pleadings have clearly pointed out the fact that we had in the letter, in response to the sheriff, asked for that meeting. That never happened. The sheriff wasn't engaging with us. There was no opportunity to have that meeting. And, you know, the tribe was put in a place that I don't feel like they had much other option other than to sue. I can't really respond to the fact of why we didn't file a motion to reconsider other than, like I said, I don't think there was anything more that we could have presented in argument to the court.
Let me ask you this. Suppose we agree with you in reverse.
Correct.
And what are you going to do in the district court?
We will probably move for summary judgment. I don't think there's a lot of questions as to material fact. I do think this is a question of law.
So you would ask for discovery, or if the other side asks for discovery, you don't oppose it? Because there really wasn't any discovery here, was there?
No, there wasn't. But again, like I said, I don't see a lot of issue as to material fact. I mean, we obviously dispute the interpretation of the events that occurred, but the reality is our officer was arrested and he's being prosecuted.
So here seeking forward-looking declaratory and injunctive relief. So I think you agree that you have to demonstrate a certainly impending harm. Can you talk to me about why you think that you have a certain impending harm that gives rise to an injury in fact and ensures to us that this case is right?
Well, what we are concerned about is, and I think where the harm from the threat that we've gotten from the county is that the county believes that tribes do not have inherent authority as law enforcement officers. I think this court and the Supreme Court has established that we have the right to stop, restrain, detain, and to investigate and to turn an individual over to the proper authorities. Okay? That is established federal law. The county, unfortunately, does not have the view. They don't accept that. They see that when an officer stops somebody and restrains them, that's false imprisonment and detains them. And that they have no authority to do any of those actions. They must be impersonating a state officer. So unless we can get this clarified, what our authority is, and what we're allowed to do, we are going to continue to have a threat of prosecution until we can get the legal issue established.
And one of your term officers apparently was being prosecuted. What's the status of that case?
He is continuing to be prosecuted. I believe that the case is set for trial sometime in late summer.
What are the arguments that the county makes on appeal? I don't think that the judge, the district court judge, ruled wrong with respect to ILARA, the law. But it looks like the county's making some arguments on appeal in their brief that the ILARA displaces the federal common law regarding the tribe's alleged federal common law rights to detain and deliver to the proper authorities the non-Indian suspected of violating tribal or state law on tribal property. What's your best response to that?
The statute that is referred to really doesn't address tribal inherent authority, okay? And I think we need to kind of keep those two separate. What the Law Enforcement Reform Act is designed for is BIA law enforcement is responsible for law enforcement on Indian lands, period. That's what that act is designed for. It is to guide BIA law enforcement and tribal law enforcement that are operating under a contract with BIA, which none of our officers in California are allowed to do, or they hold an SLEC. So that act has nothing to do with the tribal law enforcement, such as the ones with Bishop Tribe. We do not have federal funding for our law enforcement, nor do they operate with a special law enforcement commission. So that act is really inapplicable to this case, and it displaces nothing. Like I said, our officers operate purely under inherent tribal authority and that specific law that's established by the tribe.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give you a few minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Harold McCann.
stop, detain, physically restrain, and investigate non-Indians for suspected or possible violations of tribal, state, and federal criminal and civil law. They claim this as an inherent right of being an Indian tribe. And,
but why don't you want that issue resolved?
That issue could be resolved by Congress.
No, I mean, there is such a challenge for us to resolve it in federal courts, because right now, I mean, let me play this out for you, because this is not the first Indian tribal jurisdiction case we've had. Let's assume that the tribe decides to ignore your cease and desist order. How are you going to bring them into court to enforce it? They have sovereign immunity. So what we find in these cases is that when there's a conflict between sovereigns, this being the state and the tribe, it often ends up in a stalemate in the courts, because you lack the authority to bring the tribe into court. Here you have a forum, because the tribe has sued the county. So it's obvious there's some conflict on the ground here. Why don't you want the answer?
The order that tribe is seeking is a very broad, general, abstract order. It includes all law enforcement activities within all of the states in the Ninth Circuit and federal law enforcement authority. There are an infinite number of possible circumstances that would be litigated before this court if this court were to say,
we've been down that road before. And in your position, it's not particularly strong, because you're framed here. All I'm saying is, going forward on the as a practical matter, don't you want to have some line of authority decided, whether it's you may win, you may partially win, you may lose, but don't you want an answer?
It can be answered on a specific case-by-case basis. For instance, if the tribe were to say, in response to Sheriff Lutz's order, we are going to carry our firearms off the reservation into the town of Bishop, and we're going to carry them loaded and display them in violation of California's law, at least as it is written, because we think that we have the inherent right to do that. Then we can litigate that issue. You know, they can come before this court and litigate.
How are you going to, with respect, they have sovereign immunity? How do you sue them?
If they want to litigate that issue, they can file an action for declaratory relief, and in compliance with Judge Burrell's order, they can specifically identify what the planned course of action is in accordance with the Alaska Right of Life case, and then we can litigate it with any other declaratory judgment.
But if they are to
that portion of Sheriff Lutz's order,
if they choose to just resist, you don't have a recourse against the tribe.
There may be no recourse against the tribe, Your Honor, but there certainly is against the individual officers.
I understand that.
So if the tribe wants to resolve that, they can bring the action. If they don't want to resolve it, then if their officer is going to town and take the firearms with them and walk around carrying their guns, then they're subject to arrest for violating California law. And let the courts decide that issue.
Am I to take your answers today that you intend to, that the county intends to keep enforcing its policy, doesn't it?
Well, when you say its policy, if you're referring to the policy of not allowing carrying the firearms, of course, it's California law.
You have that policy, and also your position is that they don't have authority to arrest anybody on any non member.
No, Your Honor, arrest, yes. They don't have authority to arrest. What they do have authority to do is specifically describe, in the case that the tribe itself cites, the Ortiz-Barraza case, the Sierra Garcia case, even the Washington State Supreme Court case, Schmuck, all of those cases cited by the tribe, even in their complaint as well as in their brief, make it clear that the tribes do have the right to enforce tribal law in these, all of these cases with regard to trespass or violating some type of a tribal law. They have the right to enforce those laws against tribal members. As they do that, if they happen to stop a non you the question I asked your colleague about appealability. Do you concede this was the final order that's appealable, or you just didn't consider it, or something else?
I do believe it's an appealable order with respect to the framing of this particular complaint. Now, whether this complaint could have been amended to bring a proper case of controversy and set forth a concrete plan for violating the sheriff's order, that's certainly possible. But with respect to the order that this tribe is asking for, it simply was a final order.
Well, getting back to what the chief judge just asked you, if this were to go back for whatever reason to the district court, would you want discovery on these issues? Do you think you would want to make a record to address some of the issues that Chief Judge Thomas just raised with you, or rather than just what it's presented now? It's the question of how ripe this amendment is, which is a judicial theory, and that's what we have to decide, certainly. But it seems to me that there is at least some argument here that what the district judge did was arguably premature, and that if both sides were able to make a record in the district court of what the tribe really wants in details, and there were some depositions about it and things like that, there could be a much more better articulated resolution of the merits that you've just responded about.
Without a new complaint, Judge Wilson, whether it's an amendment to this complaint, or an amended complaint, a further amended complaint, or a new cause of action, or a new complaint, certainly the tribe can fashion a concrete course of action and then discuss and litigate.
Do you agree that this discovery, do you agree that dismissal is without prejudice under Rule 41B?
Because
it's on jurisdiction.
Yes, sir. I'll concede to that.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I ask you, I asked about the tribal officer who's being prosecuted. Do you know, is he going to continue to be prosecuted? Is your client going to continue?
It was a question, Judge McGuire. Is he continuing to be the trial is set for July, I believe.
And so, as far as you know, that's going to proceed?
Yes.
Okay. And as far as you know, if the tribe continues to detain and to deliver, I guess that's what I want to find out, detain or restrain or deliver these individuals, non-tribal members, what's your position going to be?
If those, first of all, with respect to the tribal officer, if I may address that first, there seems to be a misunderstanding with regard to what he's being prosecuted for. The tribal officer is being prosecuted for excessive force in felony, stun gun attack, and battery on a 120-pound woman. Those causes of action or those criminal complaints would have been brought against any peace officer, whether it's California, federal, federal patrol, or whatever. He's not being prosecuted for being a tribal officer detaining someone. That's not what he's being prosecuted for. And I do know that the amended complaint that was made a part of the excerpts of the record omits exhibits 16 and 17, which is the description, the reports of what occurred in California, in documenting the excessive force that was used, the physical force in injuring this woman. So that's what he's being prosecuted for, not for the detaining of an Indian. I'm sorry, I've got the second question.
Sorry, thank you.
Okay.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honor, just a couple of points. enforcement authorities have the power to restrain those who disturb public order on the reservation and, if necessary, eject them. Where the jurisdiction to try and punish the offender rests outside of the tribe, tribal officers may exercise their power to detain the offender and transport him to the proper authorities. Okay, that has been in effect since 1990. This court went on over the years to sort of refine and define what that really means. So the Supreme or the Ninth Circuit has held repeatedly that tribes have inherent authority to establish through law enforcement departments and employee officers. They have held that.
So let me, can I just ask you something? So here, you're seeking, I mean, I want to make sure I understand, a declaration regarding the tribe's inherent authority that it can criminally charge, or the authority to detain and deliver a non-Indian violator to the proper authorities, or that it can criminally charge and prosecute non-Indian violators?
Oh, no. No, all of that is made clear that we cannot try and punish the dead. And so the order that we're seeking is that if we are stopping somebody and we are detaining them to determine, one, are they non-Indian, and second of all, to investigate limited to see if there's been a violation or, as my colleague pointed out, something, you know, you see 3 pounds of marijuana in the backseat, that you can just hold them until you call the sheriff and they can take custody, especially if it's the non-Indian. That's all we're trying to establish here. And that when we're doing those activities, that it's a matter of federal established law that we can do that, and we shouldn't have to suffer a criminal prosecution then for impersonating a state officer and false arrest. And, you know, and one of the charges is battery. And I don't want to get into the criminal case, we're not, it's not relevant. But how on earth you can restrain somebody without touching them? I still struggle with that. But that could be potentially the battery. So all I really want is, like I said, clarification from a federal court that, look, officers have this authority, all right, and that they should not operate under the threat of criminal prosecution. Now, I'm not asking that the court or that the officers be allowed to act with impunity. We are still bound by the Indian Civil Rights Act. Our officers are still held to reasonable search and seizure, you know, all of the constitutional protections of individuals. Our officers, the stop has to be reasonable, there has to be probable cause. So it's not just sort of parade of horrors that, oh my God, if law enforcement gets this authority, you know, this is going to be terrible. This authority has been exercised by law enforcement since Durham, 1990. And so I really believe that it's a fairly straightforward case. That, what, like I said, what the tribe is asking for.